It's a very, very delightful day. Our Lord makes it so. Even when we can't see the sun upon the earth, there's a grand purpose in being alive each day. We've been treated royally already this morning, as we witnessed and shared in the ordinance of this little child, of the blessing of this little child. Even though God has prevents Satan from having any influence on this little child, yet he knows that the child is being brought into this venue of mortality, and it's a venue of wickedness. It's the venue, though, that was asked by the predecessors of all of us to learn about. They wanted to know good and evil, so the Lord very graciously provided an avenue by which they could do this. So as a little child, we're born into this venue. And even though Satan is barred from influencing their life, the evil that already exists in this venue makes efforts to try to lead her astray. She needs to have that kind of blessing, at least until she's old enough to make a choice of whether or not to pledge her life to the God who made her in the name of His only begotten Son at the time she would be baptized. And then there follows already the plan by which she can continue to be blessed from blessings that are so far rich and valued that we can't measure them or even fully sense them, the depth and the value of the blessings the Lord holds forth for us. And I'm always glad to share in an ordinance of the blessing of little children. We live in a day of great wickedness. And we live in a day of rich promise and great truth. And righteousness has been manifested unto us and continues to be manifested unto us if we heed what He has already said to us and use it as a guide to our way back to His domain, His kingdom. And that's what, of course, we are here to want to do. Never has there been so much wickedness, so much rejection of what God has provided in the way of truth and righteousness than there is perhaps today, because there are more people on the surface of the world today than there have ever been. And one of the greatest wonders, I have many wonders in this life, and things that cause me to ponder as to how the Lord brought certain things to play when He has brought certain things into play. And I've often wondered about how so many people can be blessed in so many ways and yet at the same time turn away and reject what He has offered to them that has so much value, as I've just mentioned, that they can't measure it. And yet they're happy in their rejection of it. That's the level of sin. We live in a world in which the greatness of life, that which He has to offer us, that which He created us to participate in, is passing most of us by. When I say us, I'm speaking of the world now. I've extended my editorial use of the word us to the world. Most of the world is passing by. The richest thing that could happen to them, the greatest enterprise which they could join, and they can't see it. Or they don't want to see it. But it's still there. And we have those who see it, those who sense it to any extent whatsoever, know that we have a responsibility to try to share about that great plan of salvation in ways that can attract and can lead others to turn to that way. And we've got to know what that plan is. And we've got to sense the value of the things that the Lord has said by seeing that we do what is required for us to do in order for us to receive the value of those things. You see what God has done. He's invited us to join His enterprise. That's the first words we heard when we were created as spiritual beings. Most of the Christian world doesn't know that. Boy, that's one of those things that the Lord has seen fit to restore for the knowledge and the awareness of those children who walk in the latter days. He wanted them to know that not only that He created them, now the world knows this, but He also spoke to them and gave them their challenge in life, which was nothing less than the invitation to join Him, to be concerned about things that He's concerned. And they would inherit power that they cannot measure, because God has said He's willing to share all things with them. And all of the spirits of men He created before He created man in the flesh. And He spoke to them. And I believe I was there. I believe this little child who we saw blessed this morning was there. And I believe all of the souls in heaven perhaps had their attention focused upon this moment in which these parents have brought this little child for a blessing to help this child reach its destiny, to have a chance to choose, to walk in the ways that the Lord challenged them to walk when they were still with Him in the spirit world. The Lord also said many things to us. The record is full of gems of wisdom that we can't measure. But when He pours out His Spirit upon us because we've sought in prayerful ways and in righteous ways to follow Him sufficiently where He can do that, then we begin to sense the values and we begin to see. And oh, how grateful we are. But the Lord has said, and I especially probably since He gave the first of our parents a chance to live in His presence in an immortal kingdom until they made their choice Perhaps they didn't make it in as direct a sense as we think of it, but the result was they rebelled against him. They thought, well, even though he told us that not to do something, by rebelling, this meant, well, maybe he didn't know it all. Maybe there's some reason why he missed this, but it sure looks good to me. But at any rate, when we turn our way to him, he begins to share with us. But in the spirit world, as I said, he gave us all the opportunity. And I've often wondered why that was natural that the Lord restore that. That's right at the end of the first chapter of the book of Genesis. Now, the first three chapters of Genesis were coming down, had been lost, and the Lord had restored them to Moses. And it was Moses' influence that got that record created. But they were tampered with later on, and of course they've had to be restored in the last days. All that precious truth that was rejected and deleted from the first record, and we now have that. But one of those gems that he told us was, "It is given," he said, "to abide in you the record of heaven." I pondered about that many times. But then the Lord goes on to say what he means by the record of heaven. The peaceable things of immortal glory, the comforter. The truth of all things, the knowledge of all things, and the power by which all things are quickened and created. He has given us, you see, in joining that enterprise, the authority and the challenge to, if we accept it, to join him. And that's his enterprise, is to create life, to be concerned about it, and to have it function in a way that he has designed it to function. You see, life is not just physically bringing something into existence, but it's making sure that that life continues to function in the ways that God designed it to function. So we're caretakers of life. We have to sense the full challenge of what the Lord has given to us in that enterprise that he spoke to us while we were in heaven before we took our turn to come here. But oh, how gracious is the Lord and how wise is he in giving us those things. It is given to abide in us. The record of heaven. And I think there is a record of heaven, especially, that keeps track of every righteous and good and perfect thing that happens. There's probably a record of heaven that keeps track of all the other things that aren't righteous that we do. But it is a complete record of the events that take place upon the earth. And to me, he is telling us, it is a given to have this abide in you. All the truth and the knowledge of things that have gone past, as well as the things that are coming. You can have this abide in you now. But we've had very few people upon the earth reach that level and reach that belief and extended their faith in such strength that the Lord could provide them the benefits of what he said, "I've given to you." There have been a number of righteous men, and oh, how grateful you and I are that they've gone before, and the means that was provided to us as to what they accomplished, what they did, and how they approached the Lord and how the Lord blessed them. I almost wanted to turn to some of the writings of Enoch. And this morning I woke up and it was still raining, after raining all night and raining the day before. It was the concern of Enoch when God showed Enoch as he stood in his presence. And this was before Enoch had reached the time on our calendar here on earth in which Zion was brought into being. But the Lord had taken him up because of his faith that he exhibited to him. And he was a man of as he identifies it, a man of poor speech. How could you choose me to do anything? But because his faith was so complete, when he turned to the Lord began to do things and give blessings to him and began to show him many things that were on this record of heaven. He knew them. And began to show him things that yet hadn't happened upon the earth. He knew what things would happen. You see, that's some of the wealth. That's some of the tremendous richness of the gifts that God wants to give to us. So this statement, "It is given to abide in you," means it's a process by which I can bless you with all the things that I have, that I've done. I want you to join with me in that same enterprise. And so it was the concern of Enoch that gave us so many rich gems of wisdom in the early scriptures. For Enoch was shown everything down to the earth. But his concern began to show. He was taking on the same concern that the Lord Jesus Christ and the Father in heaven was showing when Enoch was shown that all of his brothers and sisters were going to be drowned in the flood because they refused to turn to him. He was concerned about that because he had taken upon that spectrum of being concerned for all things that God was concerned about. That's the enterprise that God has invited him to. And he began to sense that. And he sought somehow that the Lord might bless those people in a way. And the Lord did tell him, well, even though they would all be lost in the flood, he had not completely forgotten them. For they would be taken to a, even though that because of their wickedness, they rejected any pretense at trying to be saved. And because of that, they were drowned in the flood. But he said, I have a special place for them. And there they will go and have a chance to see what righteousness was all about. Well, the main reason was because their parents failed to teach them about the need to be baptized, to turn their life to Christ, and that there was a way of salvation. There was a way of overcoming all the sadness and the miseries of this life. And because their parents had failed to teach them, the Lord was giving them another opportunity, you see, to hear that. But the Lord has provided for any of us who want to come and exercise that kind of faith in Him, to recognize the commission that He's given to us, that we might turn into Him. But anyway, I want to get to one more before before the rains start coming. No, before our hour of sharing ends. Enoch began to show concern for Noah and began to plead, first of all, about, will you not come ever do this again, is really what he was saying. Don't bring the floods on to destroy all life. And the Lord promised him that he wouldn't, of course. And then he went on to, that was Enoch he was promising. And then he went on to answer his other query. That when Enoch said, "Will you not come again?" Because he showed him that the Lord had been born into the world, but yet the world had taken his life and put him on a cross. And then his really concern was showing. He began to weep for the loss of all the life because they had failed miserably to understand the purpose of Christ and to accept their challenge in life. And so the Lord answered him, yes. Enoch was concerned about two things primarily. When will the earth rest? Because he had heard the earth moan and groan when he saw all the wickedness take place and all of the destruction of the flood of the lives of his people. He heard the earth give expression, which it could do and can do. Just as like Jesus said, if you squelch those who want to offer praise to me as he entered Jerusalem, he said even the very rocks would cry out. But Enoch heard some of this. And he began to plead with God, can you, first of all, when will the day ever come when the earth will rest? And the Lord said, yes, it will. But before that day comes, he says, a veil of darkness shall cover the earth. Of course. Then he went on to say, great tribulation shall be among the people of the earth because of their wickedness and vengeance. But righteousness and truth will I send to the earth. And righteousness and truth will I cause the earth to be swept with righteousness and truth, that I might gather out mine elect from the four quarters of the earth unto a place which I shall prepare. So we know that Zion is not amongst us because the Lord hasn't prepared the place for it yet. And he's waiting on enough people who show enough interest in it. And he's waiting on you and I the same way. Have you ever wondered how can so many men and women live upon the earth? They're 80 or plus or minus something. Although the earlier human specimens were given a longer time upon the earth for some reason, it appeared. For they record their ages in the record we have up into hundreds of years of life here upon the earth. But at any rate, how many men and women have rejected, do you think, this phrase, versus how many have accepted it enough to show? How many times have Zion, this is something that the Lord once demonstrated upon the earth. It was demonstrated once so the earth could see. It was demonstrated once, but he's anxious now because we're in the last days that it be done once more. And the earth will not end. This venue of mortal living will not end until Zion is established once again. And so the Lord is saying, righteousness and truth will I send to earth with a flood to gather out mine elect. And righteousness will come down out of heaven, and that's already happened once. And truth will I bring forth out of the earth, that's already happened once. Whether or not he has already swept the earth again with righteousness and truth, I look for another event in which that will take place in such an astounding, in such ways that will cause us to marvel is the very strongest sense I can find right at the moment to say. The Lord will demonstrate to us and demonstrate in a way that it says that only the most stubborn of his children who are waiting in the depths of hell will still fail to acknowledge him and bow the knee. And they, of course, will be the one for whom there will be no resurrection. But the Lord has great plans for all of those who want to turn to him. And we know that. So I begin to search all back through. Besides Enoch's day, Melchizedek was an honest man and a great Christian and an upholder and a teacher of the truth. It says such a little short record about him and his people. His people wrought righteousness and obtained heaven and obtained Zion. They wanted to join the team Zion. And they did. So how much was it? It was not a condition reached as the condition of Zion, apparently, on the earth. But there were a few people who were righteous enough, and for some reason the Lord took them up to Zion, or up to his kingdom. And then, of course, we believe that there was a day in the day of Nephi, the son of Helaman. We have that as the third book of Nephi. I believe after Christ came and appeared to them, that they had a Zionic condition for the first 100 years or so upon the earth, where the Lord acknowledged them in that way. And I've often wondered how they got there so fast. They got there so fast because they had Christ in their midst immediately after he brought the preparation into play. He had to cleanse the earth. He had to prepare a place for Zion to be developed. And he did. And it was in great tragedy. And we won't go into that. But at any rate, his group, that would be Nephi, the son of Helaman, was the leader. And you wonder, well, why weren't they taken up into heaven? It doesn't say they were. Because they were living a life of correction here upon the earth, and perhaps a chance to use that in an influential way, but they couldn't hold tight to it for more than, say, 100 or 200 years. They began to let evil back in their midst. And they didn't need to be protected in any way, so that's why the Lord didn't, for their own protection, bring them up out of the midst of wickedness. They had this land all to themselves with a promise from God that he would reserve it for them as long as they could maintain absolute righteousness before him. But what was it? What was it that they did that we're not doing? We've had, or at least I've had, not too far from 100 years upon the earth. I don't see it any closer than it was at any time in my past. In fact, it may have been somewhat better in the past. There's something missing, folks, in what we're doing. And we must be too satisfied with what we're doing to want to bring about some change. What key word can you think of or find? So I turn back to Enoch's record again. Certainly there must be something. And I think I found it. The Lord gave me strong and influenced my mind, and with that good spirit confirmed into me, here's what we're waiting for. He was speaking to Noah, and he was expanding and enlarging, but establishing the covenant that he'd made with Enoch about not having it rain again and destroy all life with the flood, and setting the rainbow in the clouds as a reminder. He added one extra phrase when he was talking with Noah, when he said, when thy posterity shall embrace the truth, that's when the Zion in heaven will look down. Oh, pardon me, I left out an important phrase. When thy posterity shall embrace the truth and look upward, then he says, Zion shall look downward. Now, folks, there's something different here between, there's something else special about. We can keep his commandments, and all of his commandments are true, but there are many truths that he's related with us that we can always overlook and think, well, I'm keeping all the commandments. Folks, every word he's uttered to us and every bit of guidance he's given to us is for our benefit. It's of great worth to us. And until we reach a state of mind where we're wanting to embrace truth, follow it all, not just what makes it comfortable for us, but keep the words that he's provided for us and understand them and always care for them and safeguard them and make sure we are those who have embraced every word he has said. For hasn't he reminded us, thou shalt live by every word, not just by every commandment. But the commandments are his word, that are included. But there are other things that are not given to us by way of commandment. You go back and read the first chapter of Genesis right at the end again, where we were all spirits and the Lord was giving us. He didn't give us our commission, our objective in life. It wasn't by word of commandment. He was speaking to us to bless us, he says. And I blessed them after he had finished creating all the spirits of men. Then he says, then I blessed them and told them what my challenge would be. And you'll have to read it and study it. Thou shalt multiply and replenish the earth and subdue it and have dominion over all other forms of life that move and inhabit the earth. See, we are concerned about life, and life has its concerns not only in our physical existence as we know it now, but in the life that's to come. We're to be concerned about life and preserving life and promoting life. And unless we are willing to take upon us that kind of challenge, we're falling short. We haven't embraced the truth. It's good to be with you. And I'm already over time. But the Lord has done a mighty work. He's waiting for us to show Him that we want to and will pledge our life to being a helper, a co-worker. And we are thankful for the invitation that He's given to us.